Hello, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health. Our topic today is systemic adjuvant therapy in early breast cancer. I'd like to thank the National Comprehensive Cancer Network for accrediting this program, as well as our supporters, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Genentech, Novartis, and Pfizer. Physicians and other healthcare professionals can earn free CME credit by registering online at discoveryhealthcme.com and taking the post-test. All the graphics and references from today's program will also be available online. It's easy to log on, take the post-test, and earn free credit for this program, so do it today. We're fortunate to have a distinguished group of experts in our studio to discuss the use of systemic adjuvant therapy in early breast cancer. Dr. Lori Goldstein, director of the Breast Evaluation Center and leader of Breast Cancer Research Program at Fox Chase Cancer Center, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Dr. Cliff Huddis, Chief Breast Cancer Medicine Service, attending physician and member, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and Professor of Medicine, Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City. And Dr. Robert Carlson, Professor of Medicine, Division of Oncology, Stanford Comprehensive Cancer Center, Stanford University Medical Center in Stanford, California. We thank each and every one of you for joining us today. Systemic adjuvant therapy is used in patients with early breast cancer to decrease the likelihood of developing recurrent or metastatic disease. It's a complex topic with constantly changing research and data. During the next hour, we plan to cover the indications for systemic adjuvant therapy, predictive and prognostic factors in adjuvant treatment, including risk assessment and testing for tumor markers, the appropriate use of cytotoxic chemotherapy, endocrine therapy in pre- and postmenopausal women, targeted therapy for HER2-positive tumors, and optimizing systemic adjuvant therapy for individual patients. So let's start here, Dr. Goldstein. Just how many women might benefit from systemic adjuvant therapy?
I think to start, we need to define what the problem is. Looking at the incidence and the mortality of breast cancer, approximately 180,000 women are diagnosed each year with breast cancer, while about 40,000 women a year actually die from the disease. The good news is that the mortality from breast cancer has actually declined over the last 15 years. And we think the two contributing factors to this is one, adherence to mammography, and secondly, the impact of advancements in the adjuvant systemic therapy of early stage breast cancer. However, it is still a common problem, and it's the second leading cause of cancer deaths among women.
So what is it that medical oncologists can do to better address the issue?
Well, globally, what we do is we give systemic therapy, which we call adjuvant treatment, and this is different from most of the rest of medical oncology. And the reason it's different is that we don't have concrete endpoints in each individual patient to look at. If somebody has advanced lung cancer or leukemia, there is essentially a guidepost along the way as we're treating. The leukemia burden goes down, the lung cancer shrinks. In the adjuvant setting, we don't have that ability. We're treating large groups of people. Contained within those groups are the subsets who actually have the microscopic metastatic disease. Here the problem is that the earliest randomized trials in breast cancer were so small that much of what we saw when we compared the arms of those trials could be attributed to noise, that is, random fluctuations in the data. And this was a really big public health problem because it meant that clinicians could constantly argue about whether adjuvant systemic chemotherapy or hormone therapy was actually effective. For every positive paper reported, there'd be another one equal and opposite, matching it in the opposite direction. So a really important breakthrough that I think most medical oncologists have to learn to turn to is the Early Breast Cancer Trialist Collaborative Group. And what they do very specifically is they invite the principal investigator of each and every prospective randomized clinical trial concerned with early stage breast cancer to come to Oxford and bring their raw data. And from that, we come up with real bottom lines, and they're easy to summarize after all this discourse. One, adjuvant chemotherapy lowers the rate of recurrence in patients who are candidates for it significantly. Types of chemotherapy matter. The anthracyclines provide an advantage over and above the first generation of regimens, which were labeled CMF, but really constitute a variety of things like that. And tamoxifen lowers the risk of recurrence and death in women who are randomized to receive it versus not. That is the foundation of our adjuvant therapy decision-making, and what we talk about builds on that.
Much of our discussion today will be based on guidelines from the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. To make the best use of these evidence-based guidelines, it's vital to understand how they're created and how to interpret the recommendations. Here's a look. The NCCN Clinical Practice Guidelines in Oncology are crucial to improving the quality of care for patients living with cancer. NCCN's Guidelines program is considered the gold standard for oncology care in the U.S.
As an academic physician, I really value my participation on NCCN guideline panels, particularly to have the opportunity to interact with colleagues in a multidisciplinary setting to have an impact on the care of cancer patients.
The NCCN guidelines are developed by 44 panels of physicians whose expertise spans more than 100 diseases in the oncology spectrum. The guidelines are updated continuously with new data and recommendations by leading physicians and other clinicians from the 21 NCCN member institutions.
Since the goal is to provide the best outcome for an individual patient, we can achieve that only by looking at the entire course of treatment for that individual patient.
NCCN guidelines are based on categories of evidence and consensus. These categories range from 1, meaning there is uniform consensus among the physicians that a recommendation is appropriate, to categories 2A and 2B, which indicate uniform or non-uniform consensus on lower level evidence, to a category 3, in which there's major disagreement about the recommendation. All recommendations are category 2A unless otherwise noted. The most up-to-date guidelines can be found online at nccn.org. NCCN creates guidelines for many types of cancer, and all three of you were involved in developing the breast cancer guidelines. Dr. Carlson, why don't you tell us about that process?
Well, the Institute of Medicine has defined a clinical practice guideline as a systematically developed document to assist practitioner and patient decision-making in healthcare situations. The NCCN, in developing its clinical practice guidelines, uses what's called an evidence-based consensus approach. Using that approach or process, when there are situations with high-level evidence available, that evidence is used to generate the guidelines. In circumstances where high-level evidence is not available, then a consensus is reached among the experts on the panel. As you can imagine, in those situations where consensus is necessary, the discussions are often quite lively and spirited. The NCCN guidelines are updated on an ongoing basis with at least an annual in-face meeting, as well as if there is high-impact clinical data that becomes available in the intervals between the meetings, then there are telephone conference calls and so forth that are undertaken to be sure that the guideline is always current.
Well, all these guidelines are based on very strong evidence that systemic adjuvant therapy makes a real difference for women with early breast cancer. Which patients, Dr. Huddis, would qualify for this treatment?
The decision to give adjuvant systemic therapy is the kind of decision doctors make all the time in all areas of medicine. That is, it's not something that's a simple rubber stamp type decision. One has to take into account many, many factors, some related to the patient as a whole, some related to the disease as a whole, and frankly, it's important to take into account the patient's desires and goals as well. So who's a candidate for adjuvant therapy? Firstly, somebody with an invasive breast cancer, generally a tumor that exceeds a centimeter, although that threshold has been, I'd say, reconsidered lately with increasing biologic information. Certainly patients with involved lymph nodes. And then patients who have hormone receptor positive or HER2 positive tumors are candidates for some specific kinds of therapy like hormone therapy or trastuzumab.
Could you talk a little bit more about the biomarkers and how you identify which patients?
Well, one of the important advances in medical oncology in general and breast cancer in particular was the discovery that some breast cancers are, if you will, fueled, that is, driven to grow by the presence of estrogen. So we test breast cancers for whether they express, that means produce, the estrogen receptor, and most breast cancers do, and whether they don't express that. And a minority, an important minority of breast cancers do not. I should add, we do the same thing with HER2, HER2. Our ability to target those proteins and interfere with their function is really an important aspect of the treatment of breast cancer.